in the corporate control media, such as Noam Chomsky, Ralph Nader, Thomas Frank, Naomi Klein, Richard Wolff, Chris Hedges, and Vandana Shiva. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. To place a credit card order for CDs, MP3s, or written transcripts of today's program, David Harvey, The End of Capitalism, call us at 1-800-444-1977. Again, that number is 1-800-444-1977. Or you can order on our website, alternativeradio.org. The Kronos Quartet performs our theme music from Pieces of Africa. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 10 o'clock, and coming up at 10:15 on Flashpoints, journalist Rick Sterling explains the propaganda surrounding the White Helmets organization in Syria, and historian Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz discusses her book, All the Real Indians Died Off. Stay tuned for Air Cascadia with host Chris Andre.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Underground Grad School. Classes that begin in November include What's the Buzz About Bees, Criminal Law, Rewilding 201, and more. Portland Underground Grad School is also known as PUGS. Classes take place all over the Portland metro area. Information about registering, teaching classes, and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, October 25th, 2016, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM on the air, kboo.fm on the web, all nasty all the time. We have a couple of guests today for you. Tom Carpenter, the executive director of Hanford Challenge, joins us to talk about recent accidents at Hanford, and what they mean for our future as really a people on the planet, because this is Hanford is really a ground zero for America and the world's nuclear problems. It turns out nuclear energy not quite as clean as promised. We also hopefully will be hearing from Dallas Goldtooth with the Indigenous Environmental Network. What's been happening out there at Standing Rock over the last 48 hours or so is truly extraordinary. It's basically war on First Nations. First Nations, of course, the Standing Rock Sioux, are a sovereign nation, as is the United States. Sovereign nations are expected to negotiate with one another. That's not been happening. The sovereign nation of the United States of America is waging war on Indigenous people again, although it's not so much again as continuing, because the war on First Nations has never really ended. This is one of the most serious flare-ups, and what it has served to accomplish is to solidify all First Nations peoples, really, under one lodge, as they say, one big tent, as politicos like to call it. This is indeed a big tent, and First Nations are beginning to compare notes on the travesties that have been enacted against them in their communities, where environmental crime is rampant, perpetrated by the sovereign State of the United States of America. Got Dallas Goldtooth isn't having it. He's been reporting constantly. This morning, however, there's a strange silence emanating from the encampment. Very likely this is yet another media and telecommunications electronic blackout that these happen from time to time. Of course, the camps are constantly circled day and night by helicopters, and they are also the small planes that carry the jamming equipment. So I'm guessing that's probably what's happened, because I've called everyone and I have a huge list, and it's all dark out there along the frequencies. To ensure the protection, though, of a new camp that was established on the weekend from overtly militarized law enforcement, the water protectors there have established three road blockades, and police are continuing to fire at them. They use rubber bullets, which at close range are, in fact, depending on circumstances, lethal. They are shooting down the communications drones used by the water protectors, and we're hoping again, as I said before, that to have Dallas Goldtooth join us on the line. The McCarthy Camp Horonex and Osseti Sakowin Camp, the coordinator of that camp, says that today the Osseti Sakowin has enacted eminent domain on the Dakota Access Pipeline lands, claiming 1851 treaty rights. Since when does the United States of America get to ignore treaty rights which were negotiated in 1851 in good faith by both parties, or perhaps only one party? We hope again to get a first-hand report. We've got a first-hand report, though, of what's happening at Hanford from Tom Carpenter. So the executive director of Hanford Challenge joins us. Good morning, Tom. We are grateful to you for joining us today.
Well, thanks. Good to be here.
Well, so this is the event at Hanford, where a number of workers there were contaminated. This, again, we get these reports so frequently that the general public seems to be almost sanguine about the whole thing. It doesn't stir up the awareness and the concern that it once did, but then that's not a good sign. I believe when we become complacent about the dangers, that's when we are in the biggest trouble. But Hanford's been going on for a long time. Americans in general, people in general, don't respond very well to catastrophes like climate change when they take place slowly over vast stretches of time and space. Hanford, now, this recent contamination, first tell us what exactly happened there.
Okay, well, last week there was an incident in the tank farms where a flexible hose came loose and spread radioactivity and contaminated the skin of some 8 to 10 workers. Some people got contamination on their clothes, but fortunately they were all wearing supplied air, which is a mask with an oxygen tank. And that was only because a judge had ordered the use of supplied air at the Hanford site inside the tank farms as a result of our lawsuit and the lawsuit by the Attorney General. So lives were saved probably because of that. The skin contamination can be washed off, and apparently nobody got contaminated internally. But it is a wake-up call because, you know, something like that shouldn't happen. You know, Hanford is the repository of most of the nation's high-level nuclear waste. And when you have a bunch of small accidents, it's really only a matter of time before you have something more serious kind of cascade out of control, which is why the Northwest ought to be worried about what's going on at that site.
Had they not immediately acted, what would have likely have happened if they had simply reported it and taken a shower and gone home? What would they expect the consequences to be?
Well, you know, there's no such thing as a safe level of radiation exposure. So getting radioactivity on your skin isn't a good idea. And unfortunately, we don't have any reports that anyone inhaled it or got it inside their bodies. Really, the question remains is how did it happen and how far did radioactivity spread? The company claims that it stayed all within the immediate area, but we've heard from some people that there were particles of radioactivity found on their clothing, you know, in other buildings that were carried there by workers in that. So it's just that shouldn't have happened if that's the case. And again, I think we're even though this incident by itself it was tragic insofar as all these people, you know, were contaminated and should not have been, there apparently are not going to be any long-term health consequences that we can think of for that. But again, you are looking at the largest collection of high-level nuclear waste in the nation stored at the Hanford nuclear site. And it's an old facility. It's falling to pieces. And there seems to be a huge emphasis on getting this, you know, cleanup done quickly and at the cost of the health and safety of workers, and maybe at other costs, too, at the cost of safety. So that's the concern that we have, is that there could be a catastrophe out there one day, and it won't be a whole lot we could do about it once it starts to happen.
Well, it is indeed... as you said, workers should not have to endure such working conditions in 2016, certainly. What exactly was the source of the contamination? Or is this just a basic, is it always like that, but they just happen to be exposed?
It was a tank. It was a nuclear waste tank, and there was a connection to that tank called a jumper, and that it's a flexible hose connected to a valve, and that flopped open. And so the contents of the tank and some radioactivity there were able to escape that tank and into this pit area. So that's what happened. And again, it wasn't a risk to the public from that particular thing. However, you've got hydrogen gas building up in these tanks. That hydrogen gas has to be monitored. It can reach explosive limits. It can, catch on fire. That would be a bad day. A third of these tanks have leaked. More will leak. The tanks are falling to pieces. And there seems to be, we've spent, as taxpayers, $19 billion on managing tank waste out there, and yet not one drop of it has been treated, much less disposed of. So it's going to just keep going on as long as all this money is available and zero accountability.
What about the vitrification was talked about? It seems that vitrification would work if they actually knew how bad the situation was in the tanks, and it would only suppose they use vitrification, they seal it all up. Reactions are going to continue. How do they stop reactions from continuing inside vitrified tanks?
Well, the waste would be removed from the tanks is the idea, and taken to a separate facility and the waste separated and eventually vitrified. However, that's turned out to be a complicated
They can take it out of the tanks and take it somewhere and vitrify. Bottling soda pop. This sounds like we haven't heard a lot about vitrification. My guess is the reason that it doesn't work because the stuff in there is too hot and reactions are going. How do they stop reactions from continuing, whether they vitrify the tanks in situ or they take the stuff somewhere else and vitrify it there, bottle it essentially? We're right down to the last few seconds, but I am very curious as to how they stop reactions.
The reactions are chemical reactions, not nuclear reactions per se. There is the effect of radioactivity on liquids that causes the release of hydrogen gas, but it can be done. It's just not being done. So it just is going to be expensive, and you've got the wrong parties in there, conducting this cleanup right now. And until we change that and change the system, we're just going to get more failure.
I've We have about 30 seconds left. I want you to, if you could give us some the sources to go to continue the conversation. But who in the end is responsible for this?
Government, U.S. government, Department of Energy.
But,
they've been
right.
on this site all these years, and until you change them out, then basically you're going to have the same issues and problems. And you can go to HanfordChallenge.org, Hanford, H-A-N-F-O-R-D, Challenge, .org. That's our website. We've got a lot of information on there about chemical tank vapors, worker health and safety, the tank waste, the waste treatment plant. It's all there.
Thank you so much, Tom. My guest has been Tom Carpenter, the executive director of Hanford Challenge, joining us today to talk more about Hanford, which has somehow fallen out of the news. But wow, one of these days is going to come roaring back onto the front pages and the top of whatever your Twitter feed is. That's going to be what a hell of a day for Cascadians. It's good. You're going to stay on top of it, and you're going to be on top of the Energy Department and call them constantly. This has been Air Cascadia for Tuesday, October 25th, 2016. Engineering today is Janet Addison. Thanks, Janet. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.
And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is your daily investigative news magazine. Well, we turn our attention back to Syria. We're going to take a look at the white helmets. They've been getting a lot of attention, nominations for Nobel Peace Prize, have been the darlings of the Western media, including the more progressive media. But our first guest, Rick Sterling, has a bit of a different view. He's written a piece that appears today, or last night, I guess, in the consortiumnews.com.